on 1116 SEN. The Bush and the Burbs with Paul Daffy for Abus, the brand chosen by security professionals. If you love it, lock it with Abus.
Even if you don't mind it, lock it with Abus, because the last thing you want is to get your stuff nicked by somebody else. I've just got to say, I'm watching a bit of a highlight here, and this lad, Nebruga, is a very tall young American, sort of a lanky streak of a lad, and he is but a lad, has just birdied the last to record an extraordinary, and I'm pretty sure it's his first round in a major. If not, there wouldn't have been many others. The amateur from America is 5 under after his 18 holes, and he will sleep well tonight. Not bad, eh?
Very good for him.
It's football local that we talk about, though. Bush and the Burbs, where were you last weekend, and what was a sabbatical for many clubs?
There's a sabbatical in the MOs. Well, the top three grades in the MOs had a two-week sabbatical, which is unprecedented. I went down the road to watch Northcote Park host McLeod in the Northern League. I enjoyed that. The day was it was actually nicer in Melbourne than it was in the northern part of the state. It was a bit drizzly in the first quarter, and then it was fine for the rest of the game. Nice and tight the first half, and then McLeod kicked clear in the second half to win by about 8 goals, maybe 9 goals. But I enjoyed...
What's McLeod's nickname?
They wear the blue, royal blue, gold and white panels. I can't remember their nickname.
I've just realised they're... And Jordan Spieth has birdied, so he's 6 under through 11. Boy, he's a good player. Remember, he's won two majors this year, and he won the John Devere Classic last week. He's in red-hot form. The McLeod's logo should be a cowboy riding on a horse with the New York skyline behind him.
With one of those Marlboro Man jackets.
That's right.
With the woolen collar.
Yeah, and 10-gallon hat.
Yeah.
5-gallon hat.
That should be the logo. You're right.
Yeah.
But a few things. There's a tall defender for McLeod. Jack Langford was as clearly best on ground as I've seen for a long time. He just must have taken about 13 or 14 marks in the back line, I reckon. But I particularly enjoyed watching Cahal Kaur. Now, I saw his name and said to...
Former Saint.
That's right. I said to Mick Lovett, who's a former McLeod president, a well-known journalist around town, friend of this show, I said, Cahal Kaur, man, his name's very Irish. He said, yeah, well, he grew up in Ireland until he was about 10. Then they came over. And he was at St Kilda for a little while on the rookie list. And his brother is Aidan Kaur, who's
for GWS,
playing
right.
In the seniors for the Giants. Cahal's got a very un-AFL body. He's very strong around the rump. So he's one of those guys. He's a talented guy, very strong on the ball, probably plays taller than he is. He would be about 185, I reckon, at the most. But he's just great to watch. Bustle around the forward line. When the ball's near him, he's one of those guys, you know something's going to happen.
So and he's a good one.
You remember watching him for me?
Yeah, look, he didn't play
much. Did he
much
play a senior game or not?
No, and he didn't even play much for Sandringham, so he had a fair bit of work to do.
Okay, so maybe I was right about the, probably the lack of athleticism let him down there, but local level, fantastic.
Yeah, of course.
And Harmit Singh, the playing coach in Northcote Park, is an interesting fella. Plays at halfback, got as crunched, as hard as I've seen anyone get crunched in the last quarter. He's caught, got sandwiched mid-air in this shocking collision with players coming from all sides. But I spoke to him afterwards for the podcast. He's coached Morwell to the past two premierships in the Gippsland League, despite being only 26 and 27 years of age.
But is he a Gippsland boy?
No, he grew up in Ashburton.
Yeah, that's right.
I interviewed him. He grew up in Ashburton. I said, what's your background, Harmit? And he said, it sounds like a cricket name, doesn't it? But I, Fiji and Indian background, come over from Fiji at 10. I didn't speak English when I first got here, but started playing footy and just loved it. So he's very highly regarded in local footy circles, and he works for Collingwood in player welfare, I think.
Oh, he had me won over till that last bit. obviously, cheap shot of Collingwood. No, that's great. I've heard tell of him. Locally, pretty impressive type and also very capable footballer.
Yes, yeah, a good distributor from the back line.
Yep.
Didn't have the best game of Saturday, to be fair, but you can see that, you know, he's a thinking footballer, I suppose. He picks out a player up the field and on it goes. He played for Castlemaine as well in the Bendigo League. So he's been around a little bit. He's still only 28. He's been coaching for a few years now, so... It's interesting when you get a young playing coach, I reckon. It sort of doesn't happen as much now that they do it with with much success. But once upon a time, almost every team had a playing coach. Now it's not rare in local footy, but it's certainly less common than it used to be.
Given that even at local football level, team structures and various pre-planned and heavily rehearsed manoeuvres and setups are key at all levels now, is it possible to have a playing coach do the job properly, or are you a playing coach, but whilst the game is on, another deputises and you put your trust totally in them?
All playing coaches have at least one assistant they trust implicitly, and I reckon the local footy sides that try to perfect the whole stoppage routine and the flooding and so forth of AFL clubs are kidding themselves.
That may well be a step too far, but certainly I've seen even in reserve level at amateur clubs, for example, Ormond now are well drilled and they have a setup when the opposition has the ball and their backs know where to stand and they guard space rather than players. Mm. And those teams, and this year, there's been a real sort of, it's funny, maybe D1 reserve is where the
salt water central.
It's where past worlds and new worlds collide. It might be estuarine water where seawater and fresh water mingle. But
the brackish football division.
Correct. So there have been some absolutely unthinkable blowouts, 36 goals to 1 point, and it's always an ode to availability, but also to set up, where some teams still have sort of roll, you know.
Six in the forward lines.
Well, they have rolling players, guys who could go after the ball and guys who are too tired to move after, you know. But
so you reckon I was going too far to saying you're kidding yourself if you're trying to set up?
Absolutely. They can't possibly go through the rigorous drills and plays and movements that an AFL club do, but certainly They all train as one now, Ormond, reserves and seniors, and they're all on the same, reading out of the same hymn book, and that is, I'm sure I'm not speaking out of school, but they have structure and it makes such a difference. You can see it.
Okay, I did go too far. You can set up around stoppages, of course. I suppose just the flooding and the discipline of the spread with an entire team getting down to the forward line, that takes, I would think, more than two nights training. And in many cases, some players can only get one night. The time it takes to teach and
perfect that
sort of stuff. It's ambitious. I mean, maybe it does work in local footy at the really good clubs where the players are paid and they turn up on the expected nights and probably...
Ormond. They're subject to all the rigours of and vagaries of a team with guys that have bills to pay and sometimes mouths to feed more than themselves. It's an interesting discussion.
It is an interesting discussion.
If anybody can shed some light, if you're a player at local level, are you a part of a club that has taken on more of this team planning, team meetings structure, for want of a better term? Or is it still the old-fashioned back pocket, half-back flank, lumpy on the bench? So 9429 1116. We'd love to hear from local footballers who are either part of the new world or still part of the old. We're going to take a break. Welcome back. Well, we're putting the question to our local footballers, maybe on the way back from training, or at least catching us as they do on every Thursday night at this time, 9 o'clock. Daff and I have been talking about structures and playbooks and pre-planning that goes into all levels of football, and I've observed at D1 reserve level that it exists. And off the SMS, g'day Finey, I've coached at D1 level in the amateurs for 4 years and we have a full playbook. Everybody is doing it. The playbook exists. I wonder what team that is. Might be Q because they're bloody good. Have they been in D1 for 4 years?
Q? No, this is their first year.
Okay. Who's been in D1 for... You've got...
Hodgelong have been in D1 for 46 years, I reckon.
That's a long time, given D1 hasn't been around for that long. But... Yeah, I was going to get you to do the detective work.
They have gone up to sea, but they seem to be around that D-mark.
You reckon the D-mark? Yeah. Now, Moen Ali's gone for another 4 or 2. He's 1 for 18, and we've just got the SMS. You're going, Moen. Well, he might be going, but hopefully he's going over the fence, not going for another wicket. He's going for the wicket. Let's hope he don't get it, unless you're English, in which case, good luck, old chap. Ben is on the road and can further illuminate the state of mental preparation and pre-planning that goes into all levels of footy. G'day, Ben.
Hello, Vina. Yeah.
G'day, mate.
I love coming home from footy. You guys.
Oh, brilliant. Now, are you a coach at local level or a player?
No, I'm a coach, mate. I'm a coach. So I'm in the MOs, mate. Coaching St John's out in Daniel.
Well, St John's are D2.
Correct, wait, mate. Geez, you know your footy, Vine.
Oh, you got to be when you're a D1 team, you do check who's coming up your ginger. I might not have known a couple of years ago, but unfortunately the Monders we've got to keep an eye on near neighbours.
Yes.
Well, I know at D1, there's not every team's involved, but those teams that are putting in, you know, the hard work of certainly setting up, switching the play, and having a structure that means that they're not ball chasing and ball watching. It exists in D1 reserve, and I'm sure it exists in D2.
Mate, it's look. If you're going to keep your job, as a coach, look, two things, Vine. Unfortunately, we've become saturated with stats at the local level, and the problem with that is that our guys only train two nights a week. So, yes, you want them to have the IP, but sometimes they're not capable to be able to implement the IP. But if you don't...
Because of time or because they don't have the eye?
No, because it's because of time. It's mainly because of time. Yeah. I've got some tremendous footballers in my squad, absolutely outstanding players. And the second thing is, which is the flip side of the coin, is as a coach, if you don't talk the new language, then you probably haven't got a job.
Because you're seen as unsophisticated, Ben, or why is that?
Yeah, unsophisticated. And I'm very fortunate. The club funds me to do a lot of coaching development. And the biggest thing that I've found for myself, my own development this year, I was fortunate enough to go to the National Coaches Conference back in January. And I spoke, I went into Rick Nolan, who coaches St Mary's in Darwin.
The Mick son, that's right, yeah.
And, mate, he just had this fantastic workshop on what he uses as video.
Yeah, Mick's...
And I've adopted it, and I'll never go back. So not only now are you talking about language, but you're also, your sophistication now is you've got to be prepared to use video, because Generation Ys and Millennials, that's their whole scheme in life.
That's right. Well, do you play against an opposition team which just sort of kicks long to the longest option and kicks to the hot spot in front, 20 metres out from goal, and that sort of traditional sort of style of game, or not?
Well, I don't want to disrespect my opposition coaches by any stretch in that sense. I'd say that, you know, at our level, what you find, and I've coached in the VCFL, and I've coached FAFRA, and I've coached in the Southern FFL, the Southern Footy, and, mate, it is at times a case of the haves and the have-nots, and the more basic your list, the more basic your game plan.
Righto. So that does still exist where you're kicking to the longest option, that sort of thing.
I think that, you know, in that regard, if you haven't quite got the depth, then you're probably wanting to try and simplify your game plan whereby, it's a more longer kicking option. And in that regard, look, you know, I remember going back to I coached Mentonians. You were talking about D1, Vine. Yep. I coached OMs, Old Mentonians, for 2 years, and we made finals both years. But my game plan back then, which is only 2000, 2008, was a long-kicking game plan, because the number one variable coming out from champion data was that the highest variable stat that you can get is an effective long kick.
How much more work do you put in now, or if you do put in any more work, Ben, than you did in 2008?
I'd say probably throughout the week, another 3 to 4 hours, mainly through vision. With the software I use, it takes me probably 4 hours between a Sunday and Monday to get the vision, and then with the software, I tag every player.
Wow.
Ben, yeah. Have the experience and I think the foresight to answer a tricky one here, and that is, if every team follows the suit of those that are beholden to structures and are working hard to have a more disciplined and a more familiar, say, to AFL watchers' game plan, is local football in danger of losing its charm, which is that it reminds people of the good old days?
I don't think it'll ever lose its charm, mate, because of the one thing, it's local. And as I said, I've had the fortunate experience of, you know, I coached Bunyip for 4 years, and I go back there and watch the game of footy. No different to when you go up to Sylvan and do your little speak, your talk up there. I think you do that annually, don't you?
Yep. When you're at Bunyip, was Mumford from Bunyip?
Yeah, right. Shane was there. He was a 15, 16-year-old kid, mate. You should have seen him. He was, bless his cotton socks.
Was he? He's 125 kilos when he left Bunyip. Is that right?
Oh, it's a great story. Yeah, it's a terrific story. But mate, he was a big boy as a 15-year-old. Geez, what you see is what you get. Holds the records for eating the most sausages down there.
which is in and of itself interesting. But when you combine that with it being a premiership player and one of the best ruckmen in the competition, it becomes one of the great curiosities of our sport. Ben, you've given us great insight. Thank you so much for taking up the call to call. And you know what? Hang on to the line, because whilst we don't normally ply our regular callers with prizes for no good reason, this was for a very good reason. I'd love you to get down to Gary's Meats, because he's a great mate of mine at Paran Market. And he's got a meat tray now, which would be familiar to you as a local coach, but it's jam-packed with things like, well, the ribeye that you had for lunch.
Yes.
Daff.
I recommend it.
Yeah, so...
Ben, what's your full name, Ben?
Ben McGee.
Okay.
So there's plenty of good grub there. Pop in, pick up one of those, and a $50 voucher to New York Minute Deli for the cooked product of great burgers and other...
God, Ben will ring every week.
Well, it was a great call. So I show my appreciation by giving him two of our best prizes. Ben, please, as a guest worthy of a prize or two, hang on to the line.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Hello, Ben.
Ben McGee.
That was good, actually, wasn't it?
Yeah, and he's got a name like a little bit like a highwayman or a...
Me and Bobby McGee.
Yeah, it was you and Benny McGee. Mm. Time now to catch up with the brash one, Wayne Brasher of EFL Media. Good evening, Wayne.
Good evening, Mark. Good evening, Paul. How are we this week?
Good, Wayne. Mate, just before we get into the games, how many teams would have really highly structured games in the EFL?
I would say, Paul, probably the top three or four sides in first division have a game plan that what you were talking about before. Ben sort of hit the nail on the head before with regards to game plans and that. I think as soon as money became involved in a big way in EFL football, the professionalism sort of went up a notch. And coaches, like Ben said today, have to resort to all means just to, you know, just stay ahead of the game.
The hours that coaches put in now is extraordinary, even at local level, isn't it? All right.
Oh, most definitely, Paul. I would guess I know a few coaches, and you know, look, some coaches are putting in 5 to 6 hours a week. You know, and that's on top of trying to hold down a job and run a family. So, as you can appreciate, there doesn't seem to be much time left, to do much else.
Well, actually, there's 115 other hours in a week.
Yeah, well,
if they're putting in five.
Yeah. Well, if you're putting it in that context.
Oh, yeah. There's more. I sort of factored in some sleep there. There's actually, to be accurate, 188 hours per week.
Yeah, I stand to be corrected, Finey.
We could talk figures all night, Wayne. What division?
We
one.
Will until I get them right.
Blackburn versus South Croydon on Saturday. How's that shaping up?
Yeah, we've got a split round this week, Paul. We've got three games in Division One, and for this week and Division and the same again next week as we get things rocking and rolling for the finals. Blackburn and South Croydon are probably two sides that are out of finals contention at the moment, but they're both hoping to finish the season on a positive note. South Croydon over the last couple of weeks have played the top two sides in Bayswater and Noble Park, and they've come away empty-handed, but they're not without a chance when they travel down to Blackburn tomorrow. Unfortunately for Blackburn, their season really has just never got off the ground. It's really mainly due to injury and indifferent form. But at home on Saturday afternoon, I think they'll put in a very forward showing, and I expect them to get the points.
All right, so Blackburn and South Croydon look like they're out of the running. In Division 2, Waverley Blues and Croydon are well in the running, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. And, you know, look, this is the second week of another split round. They finish off their round this week. And Waverley Blues find themselves once again... in that fifth position, aspiring for that fourth spot that they so cravingly desire. You know, look, they seem to play well one week and they seem to be down another week. most of the time, it's, you know, they have not been really able to find any sort of consistency of form, and they've missed key players at various parts of the season, but they're still in the mix. And they come up against a Croydon outfit who really can do no wrong. They've only lost a couple of games this year. They themselves would love a win, an away win, which would, you know, go a long way for them to secure the double chance. But I think the burning question is, has the Blues got the consistency, you know, to overcome a very, very solid Croydon attack? And I think Croydon, you know, with some very key players that have played in all grades of EFL Division football, I think we'll get the points this week.
Update on the weekly hour saga. I started with 120 hours a week. I then advanced it to 188 hours a week. I'm now in Get Smart territory. Would you believe 168 hours a week? And I think that's correct, because people who now realise that I need fingers and toes to do sums have SMS'd 168 at a pace. No more bids. 168 going once, twice. Mark finds an idiot. Sold. Mark finds an idiot on 168 hours a week. Back to you, gentlemen.
All right, Division 3, Wayne. South Belgrave, who I always think of as the Black Caviars, are taking on Mitcham, who are the Black Caviar
of
the Division 3. They're on top undefeated.
Yeah, they are at the moment. Paul, Mitcham probably won't have any inhibitions when they head up to the bush, up the mountains, I should say, this weekend when they take on a South Belgrave outfit, who are always a very tough proposition to beat at home. You know, and they need to put it all on the line this week, because they've got a Ringwood side sitting outside the 5-1 game wanting to take that spot off them. But, look, you know, the Mitcham juggernaut just continues to rock and roll. You know, the forward line set up by Steve Pym and the Hogle brothers, Chris and Jaden, as well as the midfield of the Petrarca boys, Julian and Robert, and the running brigade of Braden Cross and Josh Bell across the back line is basically at the moment an unbeatable combination. But, you know, look, stranger things have happened. I'd love to see the Saints get up and win, but I just think Mitcham are just too talented across all lines.
Division 4, Wayne. Kilsyth are on an 8-game winning streak and they're not in the top two. What did they do early in the season?
They've come from a long way back. And it's like they've, you know, they started off and they dropped out in the back, and they've just been working their way up through the midfield. And all of a sudden, the last couple of weeks, they've beaten the top two sides in the last four rounds.
That's good
form. That's basically on the back of Jay Sherlock's form. He's been in outstanding form. He's kicked 40 goals in 9 games. They take on a Glen Waverley Hawks, are sitting two games out of the five. And then Armin for them last week had a day out, kicking 7 goals. But Kilsyth at Pink's Reserve this Saturday afternoon, which is going to be our EFL Game Day radio game. This is going to be a real cracker contest, because if the Glen Waverley Hawks can't get the win, I think that spells a death knell on their finals tilt.
Who was that Kilsyth forward with all the goals?
Jay Sherlock.
No shit. That brings us to the end of the EFL segment for this. I just couldn't resist. Of this week, but next week, are we back to full round next week, or we've got a split round in top division, don't we?
Yeah, there's another 3 games in Division 1 next week, and the Division 2, 3 and 4 should be back to normal.
Always great to catch up. Wayne Brasher, EFL media team member.
Thanks, Wayne.
I've now been told there's up to 192 hours in a week. If you start at the international date line in a new week, cross behind the eastern side at the end of the week, you effectively end up with an 8-day week. 8 by 24 equals 192, true story. Yeah, if you start at the earliest point of a week, maybe in New Zealand, and end up on the Cocos Islands or something, or off the coast of Australia, well, whatever. Who cares? It was just a throwaway line. Not a good one either. But we don't throw away... Well, we do throw away rubbish, but we keep prized possessions. And prized possessions, unfortunately, in 2015 often need to get locked up. There are some nefarious types out there. Imagine entrusting family safety, maybe the family pet, family heirlooms, irreplaceables, or just good old-fashioned resellable white goods and electrical goods. Imagine entrusting that to the sort of lock that would have a professional thief licking their lips. Well, not so if you put ABUS on your gates and ABUS on your important cabinets that store valuables. The professional thief walks on when he sees Abus. The professional thief comes in if he doesn't. Abus Locks, available at all good locksmiths. Proudly sponsor Bush and the Burbs with Paul Daffy. When we return, we're off to the polo. It's a good thing to be healthy and it's a good thing to keep your pants on. So Alan Mance Motors for motor cars worn by drivers who prefer pants, and the Valley Private for people who value good health. In this program, Bush and the Burbs, we love scouring the state for good performers, and we go right up to the northern part of Victoria to a club that has secured a Tiger, a former Tiger, in the Albury Tigers. Former Tiger in St. Dean Polo is an Albury Tiger, but it was at representative level on the weekend that he really made his mark, Daff.
That's right. Then got best on ground as Victorian Country, AFL Victoria Country, defeated the Victorian Ammos by 62 points, 17-15-117 to 8-7-55.
And this breaks a tradition of recent nail-biting finishes. So to have one team win by 10 goals is a breakout, is it not?
Yeah, they play every second year. I reckon for the last 20 years, I reckon about, 60% to 70% of the games have been decided by less than 10 points. It's a great rivalry.
Well, if you were after a nail biter, the man who was most effective in spoiling the party, Dean Polo, joins us tonight on Bush and the Burbs. Good evening, Dean.
G'day, guys. How you going?
Good, Dean.
Very well. Well, heading into these rep games, these every 2 year games, you would have been pretty conscious of the fact that it was toss of the coin stuff traditionally. Were Vic Country confident that they could not only win the game but had some sort of advantage team-wise over their city fellows?
Yeah, I guess you go into every game preparing to win. We knew we had some great players playing for us, but obviously you never know how well a team comes together and how well they gel. And I guess the program that Knightsy, which, you know, Peter Knight set up and which they did, it was a great program and made us come together and all gel pretty well. So it was actually a pretty good feeling going into the game, yeah.
Dan, it was a wet weekend. What were conditions like in Bendigo last Saturday during your game?
Yeah, it was. I think it was raining for about 12 hours right up into the game. But once we started playing, it wasn't actually too bad. It was a bit slippery on the surface, but yeah, it was still some pretty good football being played.
When was the last time you played in those conditions?
I don't know. It's been a while since those conditions. It's been raining for a while, but it would be a while, yeah.
And those conditions really ask the question of players head over the ball, tough football. And I guess from afar, the notion would be that the Country boys would be better suited at that footy. Of course, the amateur representative team, the City boys, would take great umbrage at that. Was that the central to the victory, really lower, harder and longer?
Yeah, I guess the Country boys are pretty known for, you know, being hard at it. And I guess one of the messages were, before we actually knew what kind of conditions was going to be, is actually to, you know, use your skill and just to play a little bit of free-flowing footy. Obviously, the weather wasn't the greatest, so I guess it's at all levels, it's just to keep it simple and first in, contested footy, all that kind of stuff wins your game. So it was a pretty clear message going into the game, yeah.
When the weather forecast came through and then the rains followed, was there a rush to change the team and fill it up with Hampden League footballers from out in the Western District?
No, I don't think so, mate. I think the message was pretty clear and pretty simple right from the start. So
yeah, great.
Yeah.
Dean, a lot of ex-league players don't particularly like representative football. They just like playing club footy. Why do you play representative footy?
Yeah, well, out of the AFL, I didn't think that I'd actually be interested. But, it was one of my teammates, Braden O'Hara, was coming, got selected also. And for me to, I guess, play at a representative level and to actually play at an elite level again and the professionalism in it and, you know, just to be a part of a good quality side again, I guess. It was something I was looking forward to, yeah. So I just guess just to play a professional on a good level again. you know, being surrounded by really good quality players.
So you play in the Ovens and Murray every week. How much different was it to playing in the Ovens and Murray?
Well, I'm guessing that the top four sides in the Ovens and Murray are pretty, I guess, pretty strong and pretty competitive. And then I guess the rest of the league sort of dies off a little bit. That's all. So it's pretty, there's a lot of inconsistencies, you know, in when you're playing different teams. And I guess we're representative football, you know, everyone's getting selected from, you know, all over Victoria. You know, every single player that plays for the team is a good, you know, quality player. So it's definitely a bit of a difference, yeah.
Then you're from Gippsland originally, is that right?
East Gippsland? That's right. Yep.
So what's the town you're from?
I'm from Bairnsdale originally.
How'd you end up in Albury playing for the Tigers?
Living in Melbourne the last 8-9 years, me and my partner, we just wanted a bit of a change, and we'll talk in the football clubs. And, you know, Chris Hyde, he coaches Albury, he used to play with him at Richmond, and he just gave me a call and said, do you want to come check it out? And always heard good things about the O&M and the league, and Seb was playing up there, so we went up there to check it out. And, you know, we're probably 2-3 hours in, and we're pretty keen to move straight up. So it's a beautiful place in Albury, and we just, yeah, thought we'd just give it a shot, and we've loved it ever since.
Do you see players in your position, having played league football, making a proper commitment? Because this is a proper commitment. What Dean Polo, our special guest tonight, is doing is he's not guesting at various clubs or maybe flying in or driving in one night a week to train. This is a genuine commitment to country football, local football even. Do you think that'll become more commonplace? Because we've had a bit of discussion in the last week or so about guest players and whether or not it damages the credibility and the integrity of a football competition. And what's your take on that?
I guess my take is, for me, I don't really understand it. I guess me, I'm a pretty loyal person. Doesn't mean, you know, other players aren't loyal to certain football clubs, but I guess when I was seeking a footy club and, you know, a new place or a fresh start, I guess, you know, I was always ready to commit and to move up. I don't really have much on it. I guess just me personally, I guess. I've committed to a football club and I've committed to a lifestyle. And
I reckon you've said it perfectly, Dean. It's a personality type. It absolutely is. And some people, it's not a derogatory comment. Some people will feel that their loyalty lies with their family and their earning power and go and, you know, have boots, will travel and go where the money's good. And others, you come across as somebody who just would look at a club president in the eye and commit to a season, and whether it was at AFL level or down amongst the dead men wherever they play, it's great. It's admirable. But then again, I'm sure that those who play as guns for hire, if they do it in the right spirit like Fev does, it's also admirable because he hangs around, he helps the club raise money. So different ways, different strokes for different folks.
Yeah, for sure, definitely.
What do you do for a crust, Dean? That's another reason that you're in Albury, I imagine.
Yeah, I finished my carpentry apprenticeship this year, so I moved up and I started an apprenticeship, and I finished it off this year. So,
How old are you?
I need a carpenter.
Yeah, perfect.
I'm building a darts room.
Beautiful.
Darts cabinet and stuff. My wife said, just don't touch anything. Just get somebody. Do it. Not. I would ruin the house.
Easy.
Well, that'd be great. You'd be back in Melbourne at some point in time.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm serious.
I can travel up.
I'm serious. I'll get Michael to take you. I don't know any carpenters. God's sake, I'm Jewish. I don't know any tradespeople at all. if you want a lawyer, I'm your man. I'm not a lawyer, but I could get you one.
Surgeon, sure.
It's been a pleasure, Dean. Seriously. And first of all the best with your time up at the Albury Tigers. It's the one thing, you need a supportive partner, don't you? All well and good to be a loyal bloke, but you can't.
Yeah.
We don't drag our wives around by the hair like cavemen.
No.
This week.
Dean doesn't know what to say to that point.
Yeah. our time's up, but I'll grab your number. Thanks
a
lot, Dean Polo.
No,
North Albury Tiger. And
Albury Tiger.
Oh, Albury Tiger.
North Albury, the Grasshoppers, mate.
Yeah, they wouldn't mind. But they're very close to those two teams.
They're playing this weekend, actually. Yeah.
Tigers v Grasshoppers, only in Aussie rules. Daff, give us two or three of your favourite score lines from the weekend before we say goodbye.
Before I do, find it, Dean Polo, Gippsland man playing in Albury. Yep. There's a famous story from the early 80s when Keith Ford, Warren Stanlake, went from Bairnsdale down to play for Footscray, didn't make it. And Lavington at the time were the big spenders in country footy through the Pokies. And they flew Warren Stanlake up from Bairnsdale to Albury in a helicopter. There was photographers there and so forth. So
who was their president? Barbara Bishop.
I don't know. But anyway, all Albury and Lavington are on top this year again. So, yes. You know, that was just a little by-the-by. Warren Stanlake flying up in a helicopter.
Well, that's enough to get us to the news. I want to thank you, and I want to thank ABUS, the number one name in logs, has been so since 1924 in Europe, and